Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And John Stewart. Yay!
Yeah, you're my new best friend. You're my new favorite person in the entire world, John Stewart.
Yay!
And welcome back to Going In Raw. It's the only wrestling podcast you need to be listening to. And that's definitive, according to me.
And okay. Scientific research that I conducted just then.
See, exactly.
That's, well, it's, I mean, I guess 2 out of 3, I can't argue with it.
You can't argue with
it. I'm on board, too. 3 out of 3, clean sweep, best wrestling podcast in the world. Going
and today, on today's episode, we're going to go through SummerSlam 2015, which was a really kind of weird. It was a weird pay-per-view, or special event. Have we decided what we're going to call it?
Pay-per-view.
Yeah, I have a hard time calling it anything but a pay-per-view. Especially when they make reference to it in the lead-up. That because, you know, they did that again on Raw where, you know, they said, you know, if you get this on pay-per-view, you got to pay. And they had a little sign that said, like, JBL held up a sign that said, you got to pay $54.95 or whatever. And then if you get on the WWE Network, blah, blah, blah. So if they're still going to, like, talk shit about the fact that it's still on pay-per-view, making them money.
Well, as long as it's still on cable as a pay-per-view option, then it's going to be a pay-per-view.
Exactly. So anyways, we got that for our book of the match. We're also going to talk about, was it called Takeover? Was that the one?
Yeah,
NXT Takeover Brooklyn.
I'm going to treat myself to that today, but I know what happened, so I can talk about it, I guess. Book of the match of SummerSlam 98, and of course, we've got our regular segment, Oh No's Adam Rose. And I've got one I actually thought of mine way ahead of time. Very proud of it. I'm going to build it up as much as I can so that everybody can be just completely let down by it.
Good. Mine's awful. It's going to be great.
Awesome. Yeah, mine's terrible.
Perfect. Everybody's is horrible. That means it's going to be good. But first up, we're going to talk some SummerSlam 2015. Just a really, really weird turn of events all over the place. Larson, do you happen to have our predictions laying around anywhere?
I can pull them up right away.
If you can pull up our predictions. Do you have Dan's predictions, too?
Those are floating on Twitter.
Those are floating on Twitter.
They're buried under a million tweets right now. they're the sort of people that, like, when a building collapses, the rescues are like, nah, fuck. They're far too down now. They're gone.
Let's see here. So, I guess What's the bigger story? The world title match, which apparently to the WWE is not that big of a story because it was buried in the middle of the pay-per-view.
That mid-card match. Yeah, that mid-card. Yeah.
We were all just very confused, and I even read Dan's tweet about being confused. He said, yeah, this is going to have a weird, wonky finish because it's this. And as soon as it, like, Larson was insistent in our predictions that that it was going to have what's called a dusty finish. You know, it was going to have either a DQ. He thought for sure it was going to be a double pin, something along those lines.
Yeah, just so that I knew, I read that the program was scheduled to continue for the next couple of months, so I thought, okay, do the double pin. They both quote unquote win.
Yeah.
And they can push the story further.
I felt for sure that Cena was going to go home with both belts because, you know, why argue with history? And B, I think more than that, I just figured there wouldn't be a dusty finish where there was something unclear because it was the main event of SummerSlam, which they're trying to make into their sort of WrestleMania B show. You know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to be their secondary big show. And, you know, making it 4 hours, they're going to make it, like, a huge thing. And I'm like, okay, they're really pushing this hard. They're going to really try to make this, like, their other big, huge moneymaker. Like,
well, I got the match wrong when the dusty finish was going to happen. But I got the dusty finish at the end of the main event.
At the end of the main event, yeah. Well, you got that right. Even Undertaker, I mean, even they had, like, a clean winner. Like, there was no DQ.
A clean official winner, but
really weird.
Someone else can lay claim to victory as well.
But anyways, let's talk about Seth for a second. Number one, his white trunks were amazing, or tights were amazing.
Yeah. It was kind of confusing, though, because he wore all white and Cena was in all black. So all the people who were tuning in who liked the Arrow, they didn't know who the fuck was they were supposed to be cheering for, especially considering he got cheered and he got booed.
Yeah,
that was kind of the thing. I noticed that, too, when Stewart came out at the beginning and started reeling off names and everybody started immensely booing Cena. It's like, you know, it's New York, so it's going to be a bunch of smarts.
Yeah, but I know, like, what Stewart did at the end of that match in almost any other city in this country would be a heel turn,
mm-hmm, yeah.
But in New York, That's a face.
Oh, it was a total face. And on Twitter, of course, you know, it was a face turn. Yeah. It was a total face. But yeah, so his outfit was amazing. And he was doing, if I'm not mistaken, he was wrestling kind of a face match.
Yeah, like he was bringing out more of his aerial arsenal.
Mm-hmm, they let him go out there and please the crowd.
He was playing heel as well because he did the figure four lock.
Yeah,
which is, and of course, the heeliest thing ever. Like, ha ha, Ric Flair, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He was playing the total heel. It was the bizarrest match I've seen for quite some time.
It really was. It was. I mean, I like that they let Seth do what he wanted to do, or they let him let loose because it made for a great match. Like, it was a really good. Cena seemed kind of off. Maybe it was his nose or something, but he, like, the springboard stunner, which I hate. I hate that move, anyways. But you know, he missed that. I think there was a couple other spots where he kind of stumbled about a little bit, but still, I thought it was a really fun match.
Yeah.
And then of course there was the end. You know, the way Stewart was acting, you know, with that chair, you kind of saw it happening like a million miles
that
away,
and the grin on his face. Like it was like half, oh, this is really fun, and half, oh, I know something no one else does.
Right. You know, exactly. Kind of. Yeah. I thought it was cool. I thought Seth's reaction, like when it was going down, was just top notch. Was fucking grade A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's sort of whipping his hair around, looking at Stewart to see, did this really happen? And then he got the pedigree on Cena on the chair, and got both belts. I was obviously pleasantly surprised that they gave Seth both belts.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured that I was gonna leave being disappointed. And then on top of that, even better, there was no cash-in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Sheamus won his match earlier in the night.
He won the opening match.
I know.
I thought Sheamus would definitely cash in and win them both. And then Roy, it's like, actually, you pinned Cena, so you're just the US champion. And Seth is still the main champion on Raw the next night. That's what I thought would happen.
Yeah.
But I guess not.
I was hoping for something. I was hoping that if they were going to do... I mean, at least a cash-in can be kind of interesting at times. Well, Sheamus is like the one guy I just don't...
Yeah, we've never seen him cash-in anything, so yeah. I pretty much guarantee that would not be exciting.
It would not. I mean, we can now sort of, going to a low light, to Orton Sheamus was just so boring. And
it was just a typical Orton Sheamus match. It was capably wrestled, nothing exciting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Orton's just back to being bored.
Sheamus is a multiplier of dullness.
And I don't blame him.
It just adds dull to whatever he's involved with. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's if he's not into it, then it's 180 degrees. Like, either he's on or he's not. And my thing with Orton is that 90% of the time over the past 5 years, he's not been into it. And then when he is, it's like, oh, wow, I remember Orton could be good. And then now it's just, okay, well, you're just a big name that can now put over younger guys. And unfortunately, this month they had him putting over fucking Sheamus. So,
yeah.
I'll be honest. I actually didn't mind the finish of that match just because I like that they, you know, they had to do something. I mean, it's Sheamus, but they had to do something relatively creative with that stupid brogue kick. Yeah. And they gave it to him twice. I mean, you know, I'm reaching for straws here, I know, but...
it's Sheamus, you have to. So.
It's Sheamus, you have to. You know, and then he... gets up there and talks. It's just better left on. Like, that was not a good way to begin the pay per view.
No, I was expecting them to start with Owens Cesaro to start the pay per view.
But Owens Cesaro got a pretty prime spot
right before the main event.
And arguably that was, for me, that was the main event because I thought that was a really fantastic match. Maybe not as. I mean, it was really good. I think I probably just had my expectations way so freaking high for that match. Mm-hmm. That I thought it was going to be like an oh my god match, and it wasn't necessarily, but it was still a really great match. I mean, they put on a hell of a show.
Well done.
Yeah, and I'm glad. What did you guys think? Did you guys see Dan? Did you predict Owens coming out on top, or did you predict Cesaro? Oh no, you just said we all win.
Yeah, that was my prediction for that match. We all win,
which was true. I think we all did win.
Yeah,
and I love that it wasn't buried.
Yeah, it was a great. I mean, Owens especially because like less than 24 hours before that match, he was in the main event of NXT.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So he was probably battered. So it was a slightly slower sort of thing for Owens, but I know I kind of enjoy it. I thought it was good, and it had the right ending. Hey,
yeah.
just yes. Right ending.
Yes. I know. It felt like if like when I was watching it, it felt like a very like a Ring of Honor, like a high level indie match. I'm like, oh, yeah. Look at that. They're just letting them go at it. They're letting them wrestle. Nothing weird, nothing wonky. Just two fucking fantastic wrestlers going at it. Owens continues to surprise me with his ability to fly. You know, mm-hmm. Like, this big old roly poly guy.
He's the man who gravity half forgot. That's what Owens is.
Exactly. I mean, he's the bigger case for that particular title because he's literally a big guy. And he can just fly all over the place. So, yeah. No, because just little things like his moonsault, which he never seems to hit.
Oh, yeah.
But the way
yeah.
he just sort of springs up to the top rope, or to the top turnbuckle thing. It's kind of good. It's like, oh crap, look at that. And then he can do like, you know, flips just from standing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love his moveset and he's intense. I hope that they just give him another, like a string of clean wins, you mm-hmm. know, because he really, really needs that at this point, I think.
Well, not only does he have the moveset, but he's got the kind of the ring persona to match and the charisma.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's he's decent on the mic, but all of the little things he does is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I don't want to spoil it for you, but there's a point in the during Finn Balor's entrance at the NXT thing mm-hmm. where Owens just cracks me up.
Yeah, I love Owens. I even really like him on the mic. Like, I used to.
No, he's good.
Yeah, like he just feels very real. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. he just everything that he says, everything that comes out, even if he stumbles a bit here and there, he just seems like a real guy. You know, and mm-hmm. that there's something very appealing to that.
Mm-hmm.
So. Let's see your other highlights. For me, I thought the tag match was actually a lot of fun.
Oh, the four-way tag?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really fun match.
Just have the New Day in it. And the New Day entertaining in anything they do.
Yes.
They are. They really, like, they came out. Man, they were just from top to bottom. And then even their celebration at the end when Kofi was just hopping around on his back. And then Big E took off his top.
It was the whole thing. It was rapping and singing the New York song as New Day.
It was brilliant.
The mm-hmm. start was incredible. But they had their pitch pipes as
yeah,
like
yeah.
pitch pipes. God, it was just amazing. And then like just through the whole thing, then Xavier would just yelling stuff. Like he was yelling about what they had for breakfast. Like, we eat bacon, we eat scrambled egg, we eat good happy to protein food, we strong and just
and he
all
brought
the way
back,
through.
He brought back triceps meat.
You're not gonna get any burgers here in the WWE. Yeah.
Only tricep meat.
Only tricep meat. Oh, it's so great. It is so fantastic.
They tried to pin themselves to win.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That was absolutely great.
So good.
It was a lot of fun. I really hope that they keep pushing primetime players though, because yeah. I really love them and I think they did a good job with the belts. But I want to see a lot of back and forth between mm-hmm. New Day and primetime players. I think they're mm-hmm. both fantastic.
It'd be awesome if they'd let them feud through the rest of the year at least.
Yeah, I know.
So that could be a lot of fun.
Let's see here. No, that's all the highlights I have.
I will say that the Wyatt family Ambrose Reigns match, at least at the beginning, had a really good pace.
It was funny that that match seemed to have no beginning. They just started with the middle, and then sadly then they had a Roman Reigns finish, which I mean I guess it was sort of a. You know, whenever you get Roman Reigns these days, they're just going to try to ram him down our throats, I guess.
And it's really interesting. They're really piggybacking Reigns on the popularity of Ambrose.
I know. Like, Ambrose is so legitimately over. Like, mm-hmm. and so I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do here. I mean, a lot of people were suggesting possibly a heel turn coming for somebody. But like, Larson, I know you've said this before. If you try to heel turn Ambrose against Reigns,
it's not going
to
work.
That's going to be a heel turn for Reigns, like mm-hmm. a legit heel turn, because people love Ambrose, and they're gonna, and so I mean I guess all they can do at this point is keep on piggybacking Reigns, but Reigns just comes off like he comes off as sort of the guy who the adulating fan of Ambrose,
yeah,
because Ambrose if you ever notice Ambrose, he just sort of does his own thing and he's his own guy,
mm-hmm.
and Reigns just seems happy to be hanging out with him,
yeah.
That's the vibe that Reigns has. If
you
look at
his gimmick, he's Ambrose's friend. That's his entire gimmick.
Well, it's more like it's Ambrose's fan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at me and Larson, I never look like I'm happy to be with Larson.
No, never. And the opposite is also true.
Exactly. Like, we just hang out with each other because we enjoy hanging out with each other. I'm not looking at him with adoring eyes, and that's what Reigns is doing. you know? Yeah. It's like, it's like he's standing there. I just, the image to me last night was at the end of the match, Ambrose was standing in the ring looking like a badass. Reigns was next to him with this goofy nerd smile on his face. And I'm sorry, but if you're a power guy, which also, by the way, Larson, you noted last night we were watching, you saw Reigns do what I thought was a really well-executed power move. I forget which it was, but I remember when I saw it, it was some sort of lift or whatever. I was like, wow, look at that. And you said, wow, look at that. Imagine that. They're giving Reigns a power move because, you know, he's a big dude. He's supposed to be doing power moves. And then,
he's supposed to be the muscle. Yeah.
And then right after that, what did he do? He did that stupid Superman fist to the ground thing.
Yeah.
And he needs to be a power guy. Like, just let him, give him a power bomb, you know? Like, have
let him
that,
throw people around.
Yeah, have that be his finisher, a freaking power bomb.
I just worked out how to fix Roman Reigns. The gimmick
This goes into our segment. We sort of established a segment. What is it called? How to get Roman Reigns over?
Yeah, how to get Reigns over.
Yeah, so go ahead. This is our installment this week.
You just said it there with the nerdy, with the wonderful, the nerdiness. He should do a Clark Kent Superman sort of thing. So anytime he's not wrestling, he has glasses on and he's Clark Kent and he's just there adoringly being goofy and charming.
Nobody knows who he is, yeah.
Yeah, no one knows he is. And then he gets to the ring, just takes him off, and he just like beats people up and then puts him back on. It's like, hey, I won, hey! That would be amazing.
That's essentially what it is. And I mean, I don't know. There's so much about Roman Reigns that I think the my thing with him is that, you know what, we saw during the Shield, people geek out over him for real. Because he was the silent guy, and granted, he was silent because he didn't have any promo skills, and it really still doesn't. But he was sort of the strong, silent power guy, and all that's been stripped away. And so all you're left with is like, all you're left with is just a good-natured guy who happens to enjoy Dean Ambrose's company and beer,
which seems forced.
Which seems very forced. Like, let him be like a silent, badass guy. Take off that stupid chest protector, because to me, when I think chest protector, we can talk about this later in the book of the match. I mean, granted, this is going back a long ways and not everybody's as old as I am, but I think of D'Lo Brown and his chest protector, and he used it as a cheap, cowardly heel gimmick thing, you know, like he had it, he didn't need to have it, and that was the joke, but he used it as a weapon. And so when I see Roman Reigns with that chest protector on, it's like, you're showing everybody that you're too weak to do this without wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, either you're cheating and therefore you're a bad guy.
Yeah.
Or you're a weak face.
You're weak, you're just weak. So I don't know, there's a lot about him that I just...
And he still has the Shields theme tune.
Yes, yeah.
It's like a group of friends like separate after school and then they meet up at a reunion. They're like, what are you doing? And he's just like still in a band and he still lives with his mom working at the cinema.
And he's totally happy with that, yeah.
Yeah, he's totally happy with it, but like they've got off... Ambrose is the complete lunatic now is what they're playing. I'm almost a Joker-like character. And you've got like the future of the company, Seth Rollins. You've just got the dude who still longs for his Shield days to come
He's
back.
Matthew McConaughey what was that movie?
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused, yeah. He's just hanging out in the high school parking lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, exactly what he is.
You girls want me to buy you some beer? No? Okay. That's exactly right, though. That's exactly what Reigns is. Maybe that should be an angle for him. He has like a 1982 Camaro. Oh, that'd be good.
He rolls up to the entrance ramp in that.
He just hangs out. He just like tailgates in the parking lot of the arena with like teenagers. And reminisces about his days playing high school football. See, that's fine. That's how you get him over right there. That's how you get him over.
Maybe we should start making our monthly segment not Oh No Adam Rose, but just make it about Reigns.
It's kind of, I think we should. Like, it's kind of a more pressing matter right now.
It seems like it.
Like, if there's one thing that we want to get to across to the WWE, it should be we have lots of good ideas for Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should hire us. We should write it. It'd be great.
Exactly. Let's see here.
Talk about the Divas match?
That goes on my low lights thing. And it's funny because I love that I originally predicted Charlotte was going to... We thought last week when it said elimination, we figured it'd be like elimination,
that'd make the most sense.
The opponents would be like a survivor, because that's like a Survivor Series thing, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And so I figured it would come down to Charlotte versus like two people on one team and three people on another team, and Charlotte would win somehow. because I really think that they're going to try to start pushing her over the moon. But it wasn't that. It was Team Bad got eliminated pretty quickly, which sucks.
Almost immediately.
And I think my problem, Dan, you tweeted this out yesterday that you said one of the problems with this whole Divas thing is that
all the good ones are on the same team.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then you got Sasha Banks sort of just chilling on her own team there. Mm-hmm. And that's true. I would also say right now the problem is, and hopefully it's done with now, they're really emphasizing the team nature of this. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work because that's because the Bellas are one third of that. And sorry, they cannot fucking wrestle. Like compared to these other, it's kind of like when you bring in, I mean, Sin Cara was like sort of a guy who was just, he was a botch fest, but he was a botch fest because nobody else was used to working his style and he couldn't really adapt his style to the WWE's sort of slower storytelling pace. And so you got a lot of botches. Well, you know, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Bayley, who's probably wouldn't surprise me if she was on the main roster within a couple months. And even Paige, they're used to working a certain way. They're used to wrestling. Mm-hmm. And the others are used to being divas. And that's not going to work. You know, that's not going to work. And so once they start emphasizing solo matches, like singles matches, I think we'll have a lot more quality matches. Maybe not consistently quality matches because you're still going to have the Bellas and they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I thought there were decent spots. I like that they let them go for a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my take. Let's see. That was a 15 minute match. It was still,
and it was predominantly Paige versus everybody else.
It was the third longest match on the card.
Charlotte had like one moment where she got the figure eight in.
Yeah. I liked that they let Becky Lynch get the win.
Yeah,
I think she needs sort of the exposure. I think Charlotte and Sasha Banks, you know, for obvious reasons have been, you know, taking the spotlight in terms of the new people coming in. And, so yeah, I don't know. I thought it just suffered from, honestly, just suffered from the Bellas, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it could have been hell a lot more dramatic if they had done a proper elimination match.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like you said, it could have been Charlotte versus, you know,
like five Naomi other people,
Sasha Banks and all of Team Bella or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It would have been a lot more interesting in terms of the storytelling potential, but...
So, shall we talk Undertaker and Brock?
No, let's talk Dolph and Rusev.
Oh God! No, I cannot stand. I'm at the point. Like I didn't realize that one storyline could turn me off to so many people in the same one show.
Yep.
I used to love Lana. She was perfect as the Brigitte Nielsen of Rocky IV. She was perfect with Rusev. They were the perfect couple. And now she's just Dolph Ziggler's like play toy. And that's so horribly, like, it's so misusing her. It's so flippin' misusing her. And they have zero chemistry.
They have they have less than zero. They have negative chemistry.
They suck the chemistry out of the room.
They genuinely do.
They are the most annoying couple I think I've ever known. I watched... Lord help me, I watched SmackDown the other day, just because honestly I think I was like, I don't know, rendering or something. I had literally nothing else in my life to do at that moment. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, I'll watch SmackDown. I got tired of watching Adventure Time with my kid. And so I was like, all right, Alabama, we're gonna watch some wrestling now. So I turned on SmackDown. And even she got bored and she's like 6 months old. And they did like two really long promos. One was the Divas, which was just horrible because like Sasha Banks is the only person who can cut a promo in the Divas division, and they did Dolph Ziggler and he was out there with Lana just trying desperately to convince everybody that A, him and Lana are an actual couple, which they obviously aren't, and B, that they should be like a charming couple, which they're just not at all. And I don't know. And I'm that combined with, I like Rusev a lot now because I think his promos have been hilarious during this whole thing. I don't know. I really wanted Rusev to destroy him. I knew that wasn't going to happen. But then to have it was a count out, right? So anyways, let's talk about Brock and Undertaker.
Yay!
This was number one, like up until the last, We'll talk about everything up until the last 3 minutes of the match. Because I thought it was far better. And granted, you know, Undertaker was concussed early on in the WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
But this was the match that I thought the WrestleMania match should have been. Mm-hmm. Or, yes. You know, probably
could have been.
Would have been if Undertaker didn't get his brain knocked for a loop by Brock Lesnar. It was fantastic. I thought one thing that I loved about it was that it really had a lot of personality to it, mm-hmm. as opposed to a lot of the Undertaker over the past 5 years when it's just been the mystique of the Undertaker. Now I love that we get this guy who's like kicking people in the balls, who's got a bit more of just a disgruntled old bastard thing going for him. and you know, Lesnar's laughing, and that gif is gonna be around for all time now.
But no, that was great.
Them both laughing at each other.
It's like, I love that Lesnar kept laughing though. That they laugh at each other. Yeah, whereas you've got like the comparison with like Bray when Undertaker sits up and Bray just does his little sad puppy thing and he just melts away from his upside down position. I really like that Lesnar was just basically they just kind of went, these two guys are fucking nuts.
Yeah, exactly. It added such an aura of just insanity to it. Because it is insane. Like, if you think about it, it's so weird what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
And they're acknowledging that and letting them be that. And, yeah, you're right. You're right. Like, you just expect Lesnar to all of a sudden do the exactly what you said. The like, oh, God, he's laughing at me, too. No. He's just like, you're crazy and I'm crazy and we're crazy for doing this. So what the fuck?
We're gonna go beat the fuck out of each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And I, you know, regardless of the, we'll talk about it in a second. But another highlight of this match was the middle finger fade out. The middle finger pass out.
Okay, I will point out that the moment that happened, I went and bought the Brock Lesnar t-shirt off the store. I went, well, that's it. I'm gonna lose my WWE t-shirt virginity to Brock Lesnar because that was the coolest fucking thing. That was just the most defiant, badass. That's like the sort of shit Bruce Willis should be doing in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's it was at that level of, yeah, that's really incredibly fucking awesome. Well done.
And I love the idea. And granted, who fucking knows? It sort of feels like there is some Triple H involved there, but I like the idea that maybe it was Brock and Undertaker together coming up with ideas for this match. And hey, wouldn't it be cool if, and then one of them came up, hey, you know, we should do like a great way to protect Brock. Cause we were both sitting there saying, okay, there's no way he should tap here. And I'm also kind of pissed that they did have the Undertaker tap because I think that's bullshit, but don't tap here, pass out. And then, somebody came up with the idea, I'm going to give you the middle finger as I'm passing out. That's a fucking genius stroke right there. That is absolutely brilliant.
That middle finger was not just the Undertaker. That was to the PG era in general. Because he was he was pushing that PG. Like, that was not a PG match. He was bleeding. He was calling everyone a bitch.
Yeah.
Middle fingers everywhere. That was a beautiful match.
It really was. And my thing is this. I don't think they needed, I think Undertaker tapping was not necessary if you have Undertaker low blowing Brock, because both are signs of weakness. Yeah. One is a sign of desperation, which is the low blow, which I'm totally fine with in terms of making your guy look kind of weak, which is really just protecting the other guy, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. Having the Undertaker tap bugs me because if they're not going to give that respect to Brock or in terms of having him pass out, I just don't think they should be doing the same thing with the Undertaker.
Unless they play it as the Undertaker tapped because he knew that the timekeeper would see it and go, end the match. The timekeeper couldn't fucking see it because it was the other side of the fucking ring and it made no fucking sense. And how comes the timekeeper didn't see Jon Stewart hitting Cena with a chair? Why didn't he ring the bell then? Clearly that was a DQ, but it's fine.
I know. I mean, in the history of the WWE and WWF, I don't recall the ring guy, you know,
having any
taking
sort of
the initiative and just ringing the bell whenever he wanted to.
It was what was
Unless
the weirdest
Vince
thing?
Was ordering him to do it.
The weirdest thing was that was a match which the ending would have been improved if Kane interfered. That's the level of shittiness of that ending. That if Kane had turned up, I would have gone, that was the ending that we sort of expected to be coming along.
It was just really disappointing. Like, I remember just sitting there and just being like, oh, don't do that to us.
It's because they've been up for so long, and it is such a big match. It just felt so just...
It was cheap. It was simply cheap. Like,
I was kind of hoping that when Heyman grabbed the mic, that he was going to raise such a fit that they'd call for a restart of the match. Because I remember there was still like 5-10 minutes left potentially on the card.
Yeah.
So like, oh, maybe they'll restart it. That'd be interesting.
But, no. Yeah, I don't know. I mean... Even that kind of bugged me at the end. I think what bugged me also, like Heyman, you know, declaring Brock the winner. But it's like, you know what? No, Undertaker got his victory the way he got it. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of it. And then I think the thing that really bugged me about that ending. Not necessarily, because I was waiting for this, that Heyman came out and said, no. I actually like that. That was fine. Like, that's Heyman's thing. He's the advocate. Okay. He declares Brock the winner. Whatever. Then they hit his music. That's what bugged me. Because then that's the all-seeing, all-knowing WWE acknowledging what Heyman just said, as opposed to Brock got screwed, we're pissed about it, and we're going to do something about it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. No, then, you know, the god of the WWE universe or whatever is acknowledging, yeah, Brock is your winner, as opposed to it, you know, obviously in the record books, who fucking cares? You know, it's wrestling. Yeah. But... that bugged me about it, is that it aired legitimacy, and it shouldn't have, because there should have been a point of contention there, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that bugged me about it. It's a small bone to pick. Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but The Undertaker collapsed.
Back,
you know, like right when he turned the corner there. Hope he's okay. He's probably fine. I mean, I'd probably collapse too if I was in the ring with Brock Lesnar.
I'd collapse before.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I'd collapse on the way of the ring.
it's a long walk.
Fuck this. I'm going to curl up in the fetal position.
I thought there was so... that was my thing, is that there. I didn't really know what to expect going into that match, but there was so much great about it that the ending... like, to give us an ending on par with the Dolph Ziggler Rusev ending was cheap. And that's what it was, you know? And it cheapened the experience.
It's the push to set up for the third and deciding match.
Yeah, they could have done it so many. I mean, there was many different ways. There were many different ways you could have protected Brock, protected the Undertaker, given Undertaker the win. You know, there's a million different ways you could do that. But they chose that one, and whatever,
it was,
you know,
too messy. It was just too messy. I didn't know what was going on. It was like four or five different things suddenly happened. And the replay goes, "Oh, actually, this was happening." I was like, "This, what the fuck? This, I don't know what's going on." It was like an M. Night Shyamalan sort of ending. It was like, "Oh, actually, this. Oh no, this. Oh, it's a twist. Oh, they're all ghosts." it was. Although it may be building up to Raw, because today is going to be quite the large Raw.
Yeah.
Because it's Vince McMahon's birthday. He's 70 years old, and apparently it's been in the cards that this is going to be an incredibly large Raw. I hope they announce that Jon Stewart is the new Raw GM. That's what I want.
That'd be great. Wouldn't that be awesome if that was his I mean, it's already awesome enough that this was his first post-Daily Show thing. Because, I mean, I think we probably all have loved Jon Stewart for a very, very, very long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And to have him enter into this world, like, in such a... such a legitimately entertaining way. It's rare. It's so rare that you get celebrities coming to the WWE. And usually they just come off like, in which they usually are, just promoting something or themselves or whatever. This seemed like, hey, you know what? I just got done doing The Daily Show. I was exhausted. I'm burnt out. This is like, I fully expected if he wasn't involved, he would have been there front row. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I want a better than front row experience. Maybe they'll let me do something. And it was just...
Bring Mick Foley along, they'll definitely let me do that.
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was a really fun...
yeah, that was a funny segment.
It was a really fun, funny segment. And it's like, you know, you got one of the smartest guys working in pop culture, comedy, whatever you want to say. And he's adding, like, for once, like, a celebrity's kind of adding something to the show. He's adding a little bit of mainstream legitimacy. And you don't get that with... usually they just shoehorn the celebs in and who cares? Or they get like some crappy MTV reality show people in there. I don't know. I thought Stewart was great. I loved his Cena interference. I mean, because like that's what we would do if we were the guest host. You know, we would interfere on behalf of Seth Rollins. So why wouldn't he do that? It makes perfect sense. What the hell?
Yep.
So
I just realized we missed a match. We didn't talk about the Neville and Arrow guy versus Barrett and Stardust.
again. Oh,
we fast forward through most of that.
Yeah, we started off sort of behind, and I was like, I just want to catch up so I can talk with people about it on Twitter. And I just, there was just no reason. No, that was, again, wow. Talk about a point of juxtaposition here. Stephen ML, who I hadn't even, I mean, I knew of the show Arrow, but I've never really been a fan. But again, that was just shoehorning a guy in there as some sort of product placement type situation. Just didn't add anything to the show.
He did actually put a lot more effort in than most people who have done
things.
Yeah. He did leap off of the top thing, and it was, I think he put in a decent showing.
No, yeah. it was a decent match, and he did really good for what he is. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I kind of would have preferred to have seen Stardust versus Neville as opposed to throwing King Barrett in there and
Cosmic King Barrett.
Cosmic King.
Yeah, I don't know.
What happened to Bad News? That was a fun gimmick.
I liked Bad News. I liked that a lot.
Yeah. it was so dumb.
He has a really good heel laugh, and I thought that worked perfect with Bad News.
It's a British laugh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one. I must have lost it at some point. But he definitely has that, yeah.
But anyways, let's talk about, is that where we're done with SummerSlam?
Sure.
Sure.
No, there's one last thing. JBL said one of my favorite things. There was a beautiful exchange between Cole and JBL during the Cesaro versus Owens match. Cole said, "This whole match is a train wreck." And then there was a really awkward pause and JBL goes, "I like watching train wrecks." And I couldn't stop laughing for quite some time. It's a glorious moment.
I like that he said that about that, man. He just, you know, JBL's supposed to be a pretty smart guy. But yeah, stuff like that cracks me up because it's like, I think I know what you're getting at there, JBL, but it's just not the right phrase to use. Not for that match in particular. Time for our book of the match. We're going to talk about SummerSlam 1998.
No, are we going to talk about NXT first?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about NXT. I don't know. I didn't even watch that, so. I'm going to. I promise I'm going to.
Oh, boo.
I know.
Watching NXT.
It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. It was
absolutely fantastic.
Yes. Well, should we do like smaller highlights than normal? Then?
Yeah.
The blue pants pop. That was my highlight.
Yeah.
When blue pants turned up in the arena. So I didn't even know who the hell blue pants was with the lowest quality of. What the hell is her theme song?
It's one of, I think it's Colin Cassidy just kind of singing. I think I read that somewhere. It's either him or Enzo. One of them, because like she debuted with those guys.
Oh, okay.
Rolling Stone did a profile on her a couple months back.
Oh, okay.
How was the how was the Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tyler Breeze?
It was fine. It was kind of short, maybe what 10 minutes long or something. Yeah. But it was fine.
Yeah, it was a good Full Sail Sucks chant during it, which I quite liked.
Mm-hmm.
There was a, but yeah. There was a. I enjoyed. Yeah, no, he was. I don't know who the whatever Liger, whatever his name was.
He's been around forever.
Yeah, outside of the WWE though. So it's when he turns up and I'm like, oh, it's a new guy, and everybody's like, no, he's like 50 years old. He's like the Japanese Undertaker, and he did not look like an absolutely ancient guy. Apparently, he's been wrestling for 30 years. I'm like, damn, he's fast.
But he wrestled in WCW for a little bit in the early mid 90s, I want to say.
Yeah, he was still there when I was watching. He was there in the late 90s.
Late 90s then.
And that's probably the only. I mean, I know I've heard his name crop up a lot of times, but I mean, I do remember him from WCW, and that's why I was like, I mean, this is cool, but shit, that was 20 years ago when we were watching WCW, and he had to have been at least 20 then, but apparently he was 30 then. If he's 50 now, I don't know. But yeah, that's crazy that he'd still be able to deliver a match like that.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
There was not a bad match on the card.
I know, I'm looking for.
I had one I didn't particularly like. I didn't particularly care for the Samoa Joe Baron Corbin match.
I think Joe probably did as well as he could in working with who he was working with.
Yeah, I think that's the problem I have with it. Is I don't get anything out of Baron Corbin.
No, he's terrible.
He's pretty awful.
That was the other one. But the ending wasn't bad. That exchange at the end where he flipped him over and got him in the chokehold.
Yeah, no, it was quite a nice ending. But apart from that, it was a very slow sort of lumbering sort of match.
Yeah.
With the other flip side, the problem with that one is it just came after Apollo Crews, who can run at 90 miles per hour and is the size of Brock Lesnar.
Oh, I know, and his standing moonsault was insane.
Yeah, I when he did that, I was like, but "Where's the ropes? This is this." It looked like someone had just like set up a really bizarre Old Spice advert. Where you're like, that's quite clearly, the room's tilted to the side or something. You know, it's one of those sort of things. I believe I tweeted, he's clearly using cheats midway through that match.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, he was, it was his debut, wasn't it? Apollo Crews? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was terrifying, and that's a good thing. Terrifying, but sort of in a happy kind of way. Which I suppose is nice. I suppose he's going to have a very good time. Apparently he's another indie one that's been around forever, so.
Yeah.
So, I love that, yeah.
The women's match was probably my favorite match of the whole weekend.
It could be one of my favorite matches of the year.
Yeah.
It was
exceptional.
Yeah, the problem is, watching that before the Divas match with SummerSlam, it just he's just there going, this level is just so different.
Mm-hmm.
Women's wrestling is so above... I can't remember who said it, one of the commentators said that women's wrestling is back. I'm like, it's never been this. This is something new and exciting. And when she crushed her hand with the stairs, and then stamped on it later, and oh god, just good grief. And Bailey nearly died, so
yep,
that was
yep.
terrifying.
Just all this, I feel like I really need to catch up and watch.
Yeah, you really need to catch up.
I feel bad talking too much about it because you just need to watch it.
I know. I'm trying to. There's things I want to mention, but there's some stuff I'm like, well, I won't mention that. And
I'm really sorry. Great moment at the end of the women's match. There's a really good moment.
Well, don't.
And we can't talk about it.
Yeah, you can't talk about it. Sorry, I got drunk on Saturday. I didn't watch wrestling for once.
I watched 9 hours straight. Commit to the podcast, damn it.
I put on my own wrestling pay-per-view yesterday, NXT.
I watched like 7.5 hours of wrestling yesterday.
I booked my own show.
What else was on that? What else? There was...
Villains won. That was funny.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I couldn't get over the pop that Blue Pants got. It was just so... like, I had to go back and watch it. It was seriously... it's sort of the thing where you could just imagine like The Undertaker and Brock watching it going... well, they're not going to react to us in that way. Like, it was just... it was the most... they got a Blue Pants City chant going. Like, it is the...
yeah.
It was... like, the hottest I've seen a crowd in forever. It was incredible.
Yeah, that crowd as a whole was incredible.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
Yeah. The opening with Triple H, which, again, I'm not going to spoil, was really cool. With the... mm-hmm. I can tell... I wondered why everybody was shushing, but then I looked up why, and it made sense. But we can't talk about that, because that'll be spoilers.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being, like, you guys just passive-aggressive, like, scolding me right now. We can't pretty talk much. About that, can we? We're not allowed to talk about that right now.
Remember that bit
with the House of Cards made of ladders in the Finn-Owens match, and they leapt between, they started collapsing, and that child was crushed? God, that was a moment.
Yeah,
that child was crushed. It's funny because a couple weeks ago, if you've been like, yeah, and then Brock tore apart that car and threw that door into the audience and it killed a kid, I'd be like, yeah, right, that happened. And then it actually did happen.
Yeah.
So you never know in the WWE.
My favorite moment of the whole thing was Owen setting up the ladder on the ring apron, pinning Finn to the ring.
Yeah.
What happened after that was the best bit and cements Owens as my absolute love. But we can't talk about that because somebody
who
runs this damn thing, you know.
It was totally my plan. I went to bed before 1 o'clock last night so that I could get up early today and watch it. And then I ended up getting up at like 8:20, checking my Twitter, and Dan was like, "Oh, we get on for the regular time today." I'm like, "Oh, fuck, I guess we are."
You should have done what I did with SummerSlam 93, is just watch it while we were recording the rest of the show. And so I was caught up by the time.
Well, you don't actually have to watch. Nobody has to watch the book of the match.
Yeah, I didn't really this week.
Like, I rely on my crappy memory. I did actually watch SummerSlam 98, though, which we can talk about now because I have completely fucked the NXT segment. I'm sorry. Next time, I'll definitely
watch it next time.
Your Adam Rose thing better be fucking amazing. That's all we're saying.
Oh, okay. I've forgotten that too, and now it's all bad. I should have written it down. Now we got to talk about it. See, now I'm bummed out because we have to talk about SummerSlam 98, which wasn't as fun as I thought it was. It wasn't as fun as I remember it being. I was actually really into this one. Like as an idea, and then when I watched it, I was like, you know, just the level of wrestling these days, I think Larson pointed this out, the level of wrestling these days is just so much better than it was back then. I mean,
oh yeah, and the depth of the roster is
the
way
depth
better
of the roster. I mean, D'Lo Brown versus Val Venus, that sadly that was actually one of the better matches on the card. I think
I enjoyed that before they'd even got off to the matches, Jerry managed to call every single woman in New York City a prostitute.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like Jerry back then.
That was you're there going, you've set the tone there so well.
Yeah.
Very happy about that.
I like that when Val Venis is introduced, and he was the porn star angle guy. When he's introduced, they cut to girls in the audience that are like obviously underage.
Yeah, clearly like, just like 8-year-olds and shit.
Clearly, yeah, exactly. I mean, it looked like a couple of 15-year-olds they were cutting to. And I'm like, yeah, no, they shouldn't be there. Like, this is back when they were literally showing off women's private parts back in the WWF. I mean, the moment I'll never, it was one of the first episodes of Raw I ever saw. I remember this clearly. I think it was at Jeff's house. And Terry Runnels got into the ring. Cameraman was right behind her with down low. And you can clearly see her vagina. It was just, there was nothing ambiguous about it. It was just parts right there.
So when they say women's wrestling is back, that's what they're talking about now.
That's what we're looking forward to. Yeah, exactly.
Extreme. Nick Bailey's going to come out wearing just nipple tassels and
gloss. Yeah. Oh, God. let's, I guess, highlights of this. I think the obvious highlight was Triple H versus Rock. We sort of mentioned that already, but they put on a hell of a match for the WWE. And this kind of put them both. I remember Triple H was injured for a while after this, but this was really a huge shining moment for him. And for sure, The Rock, who was building up some momentum, you know, after WrestleMania, people really started to get into his obvious, you know, like when he really started grasping the character of The Rock and people really started understanding what he was doing and just the sheer entertainment value in his promos was absolutely, in my opinion, unparalleled. Maybe, you know, the Stone Cold was obviously up there as well. But The Rock's comedic timing, delivery, the shit that he'd say to people to run them down, it was just, every time he'd be on the screen, it was like, oh my God, everybody has to shut up because this guy's hilarious.
Yeah.
And he could put on a hell of a match. Like, him and Triple H told a hell of a story in there.
They did. It was just a really great match. Although, it has the Attitude Era rules aren't exactly the rules thing, because like China gave a low blow to someone the ref saw it and he just kind of he looked at it, was like with a slightly stern look, like, hey, now, like, just like sort of like just like a farmer who's you find on their land, like, now steady on, get follow the rules, just a bit of finger pointing and nothing much else.
Exactly,
the Attitude Era where the rules just didn't fucking matter.
Well, it seemed like even during the Val Venus match when Val took the chest protector off of D'Lo and put it on himself.
Yeah.
The ref was kind of like, should I DQ him? This is confusing. Is this a DQ or no? And then finally he did.
I do want to point out that the chest protector did look like it was stolen from a swimming pool nearby and had some like silver tape across it.
You know what's funny is that it was D'Lo Brown. I never really gave much thought in the first place. But yeah, when I noticed when he took that thing off, that was the first time in like 20 years that I realized that thing is really thin. I don't think it's protecting anything.
No, I don't think it's protecting anything.
it's sort of spongy. If anything, it's might be helping the other guy.
Yeah. But it was like at the beginning of that match, they were really selling, no, this chest protector protects D'Lo and hurts his opponents. But about 2 minutes in, that was completely by the wayside. Yeah. Every time Val hit it after that, it was doing damage to D'Lo.
This was also, I noted this like, I think I tweeted this out while I was watching it a while ago, like, because I watched it a couple weeks ago. This entire pay-per-view for me was like just me wanting to scream at the TV, I wanted to go back in time and warn people about upcoming events.
Yeah.
Because within 2 years, D'Lo had paralyzed a guy from that running powerbomb.
Which was kind of foretold when he dropped Val the first time he tried to do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, you're right. And, of course, you know, Owen Hart tragically fell to his death. So it's like, but you know, any number of other people on this pay-per-view, you could probably be like,
pretty much,
don't do it. Don't do it.
All of this stuff.
Yeah. So, but no, it was fun. You had, I remember Sable, a lot of this stuff kind of just made me interested in like, you know, why blah, blah, blah. Like, for example, Sable fought Mark Merrow and Jacqueline, which I thought back in the day, mainly because of Mark Merrow and Jacqueline, was actually a really fun feud.
Mm-hmm.
Sable was hugely over, hugely over back then, largely because she was just showing off her tits. But they also did a really cool kind of, I know she's showing off her tits, but there was also a lot of female empowerment stuff going on there. You know, Mark Merrow was trying to hold her down and keep her down, and he wanted to be the popular one, and she was like, no, screw you. And they got to the point where she was delivering power bombs, you know, Sable bombs, to Mark Mero, which was really, really cool. Like, I remember her pulling that off, and I'm like, wow, you know, physically, that's a pretty big feat, you know, for both of them, you know, for him to be able to get up there and sell that. And Jacqueline was always really entertaining. Edge was just absolutely lacking in anything that we'd see from him later.
Yeah.
So he really wasn't a part of it. But it was weird to me because it wasn't too long after this that they started booking Sable as a heel. And that was surprising to me because she was so over as a face. Mm-hmm. And then I don't remember much about her after this. And I looked it up and, they just started writing her as a heel. And then when she returned, like, I guess she was gone for a while because she had a spat with the WWF. She came back and they, like, almost immediately turned her heel again, which is all very weird to me because it felt like a big... like a big waste of potential there because she's hugely over.
Yeah, she was.
So, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, that was, I guess, kind of a fun match. X-Pac and Jeff Jarrett.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was fun. The thing that cracked me about that match, the hair versus the hair match, was at the end, I think people legitimately didn't like Jeff Jarrett. I think a lot of people, I think the wrestlers also, I think... a lot of people, like, I know Steve Austin, like, according to Vince Russo, hated Jeff Jarrett because Jeff Jarrett's dad, like, kept him down or said you weren't going to be anything. And I guess Vince Russo had written an angle where Jeff Jarrett was going to get over on Stone Cold. And Stone Cold came backstage and almost beat the crap out of Vince Russo for doing that because he's like, no, you know, Jeff Jarrett's a piece of crap. And so at the end of this match, when they start taking off Jeff Jarrett's hair, there seemed to be real villainous delight that everybody was taking out of that. Like all the, like a bunch of the wrestlers come out and it's like, why are they even out here? What are they doing? And they're just all lining up. Just like, yeah, I want to see how far into his head I can dig
scissors
this.
Scissors and shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just waiting for it. So I don't know. That just kind of cracked me up because nobody, who was it that said Larson? There was some documentary where somebody said Jeff Jarrett, he must have hit 1,000 people with that stupid guitar of his, and he never drew a dime.
Yeah, it's probably Jim Cornette.
That sounds right. That sounds like something Jim Cornette would say. But
that was a beautiful moment when he hits with the guitar explodes, and the ref turns around, and the commentator's going, "Ah, the ref never saw it." But the entire ring is just filled with destroyed guitar and splintered.
But X-Pac did throw out the two largest pieces of the guitar out of the ring, make sure those were out of the ring, the neck and part of the front.
And the timekeeper was looking in the other directions. Else. Yeah,
that's funny. And then Dan, you if I'm not mistaken, you enjoyed the Shamrock versus Owen Hart.
Yeah, the Lion's Den match. I really got a kick out of for some reason because the cage sounded so brutal when people hit it.
Yeah.
Because it looked kind of like chainmail whenever someone hit it, because basically it looked like the entire structure was moving slightly left and right every time someone threw themselves into it. But it had like an awesome sort of like really deep sound that sounded like it really hurt. And it was a cool match because it was like really small. And I can actually, that is something I want to see brought back. Not a cage match, just have sort of a much like closer match. Because they had to be like really close to it. And there's some cool stuff off the sides of it. I think there's a lot of stuff they can do with that.
Yeah,
I think
back then
really
they did
fun.
A lot of weird stuff like that.
Yeah, it did look a bit strange and blendery, and they had to have a different arena. But could you imagine ending a feud with Brock Lesnar and you're trapped, and the furthest away from you can get is about 9 feet?
Ooh, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I think there's a really... And then, you know, they could break out of it or whatever by smashing through it. But I think that was actually a really cool match stipulation that I want to see more of.
I think for the book of the match next month, we should watch... I think it's a pay-per-view before
Dan's
this.
Dan's already announced a new book of the match.
We've already announced it. We've picked
what's that?
It. Next... We already picked it. WrestleMania 29.
That's correct, yeah.
Because it's our one-year anniversary next month.
That's right. That's right. That's right. There you go.
I thought we could watch the wrestling show that started me, my very first one.
I like it. I think that's a great idea. I just like that we have it already in the podcast planned out. Yeah. We don't have to tweet about it. so I don't care what it is.
No research this month. That's good.
The thing that I love about this, though, is that...
I was just going to say that we should watch the Hart Dungeon match.
Oh, okay. You thought that that's what this was, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. When you said that, it was the basement match. Oh, God. The thing that I loved about this, though, was that Dan Severin, who was a legit UFC fighter back in the day, he was in Owen Hart's corner here, and he had made the transition to WWF, and he didn't make it with nearly as much success as Ken Shamrock did, who actually had quite a bit of success in the WWE or WWF or whatever. Well, Dan Severn came over with like a couple, you know, he had titles from a couple different fighting promotions. And I'm not sure Dan Severn ever actually understood pro wrestling. I don't think he ever understood that it's all predetermined.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
Like, he was there, and he had this white towel, and did he throw it in, like, just, and walked away, like, completely?
No, he acted like he was going to, and then said to hell with this, and walked away.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He acted like he was going to throw the towel in, and then he was just like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. They're not doing real moves. I'm going to go away. Like, he gave this thing, like, I feel like he was planned to be more involved in all that, and then just decided, this is weird. I'm going away now because I'm
not
sure.
See, I don't know if there was that much thought into it. I think he had that little personality and charisma.
That could be. He was not a charismatic individual. No. Like, he was a badass fighter. But I remember the one promo that I remember of his. He has like the weakest, wimpiest voice.
Yeah.
And he comes and he had like this sort of air of like self-entitlement. Like, you know, yeah. I look at me. I've done so much stuff. I should instantly be seen as a threat. And I'm like, no, this is pro wrestling, dude.
Well, then you see him, if you don't know anything about his past, he's like just this doughy guy.
Yeah, he's a doughy guy. He looks like a substitute teacher.
He's not quick. He's not fast. He looks like a substitute teacher.
Yeah, I did when I was reading up a little bit on Dan Severn, though. I did. There was a story about him that had to do with the Royal Rumble. Well, he was still signed with WWE, so this must have been like 6 months later or 6 months earlier, maybe, where he was scheduled to lose, to like be eliminated by somebody in some gimmicky fashion at the Royal Rumble, which is supposed to set up some sort of angle where he, I think what broke the sort of the camel's back or the straw on the camel's back was he was booked to be in a cross-dressing angle. And then he quit the WWF. But during the Royal Rumble, he had threatened to legitimately win the Rumble. Because he knew that he could probably take everybody, like, one-on-one. And so they had to, like, acquiesce to whatever finish he wanted to have in his part during the Royal Rumble match itself. Because he was threatening, yeah, you know what? I can literally take out everybody and win this thing if you want. Or you can just do what I ask in terms of losing, you know, being eliminated from this match. And so that's kind of one reason, I think, why the Dan Severn experiment never really worked. Because he was threatening to, you know...
To
shoot wrestle everybody in the Royal Rumble. What a dick. Anyways. What other highlights were there? I guess we can maybe just talk about Stone Cold versus The Undertaker. Dan, what'd you think about that match?
I kind of liked it. It's nice to see Undertaker when he can move.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's something that I sort of lack by only seeing this at the later ones. He definitely has some sort of, like, the running choke slam he did. It was like, Jesus Christ, that looked like that was cute. Although, actually going back, the choke slam he delivered to Brock sold like the fucking...
It was fucking great. Yeah.
Because, yeah, it looked like it killed him. It was absolutely beautiful. It was... What was The Undertaker's music? I lost sound for a little bit on my network because it was skipping around a bit. So when I reset it, I came back and his music was just weird. What theme tune did he come into?
Oh, I don't remember. I didn't remember.
It was a weird one. I didn't recognize it. It wasn't the American Badass. It was sort of a weird half one. It may have just been like the end of one that I knew, but it was just, I was there going, I have no idea. But yes, I apparently, according to my notes, really enjoyed it. The one thing I hated about the entire pay-per-view was the way the camera was positioned. It looked down the ramp. So you could see, or whatever it was, where they had those gates for the entrance. And there were just people walking behind those gates.
Oh, yeah.
I was there going, like, if you want to have that, that's fine, but just have a curtain at the fucking end or have nobody cross over that bit. Because people would just sort of, like, wander out, look at the thing and be like, oh, that's fun, and then just walk back. And you're like, what the fuck? What the fuck are you playing around? It's really just gone.
It did have a much more... condensed feel to it, physically speaking. I think like it felt like small. I mean, this is the thing. Like, obviously, not only has the wrestling sort of become faster and more intense, and I mean, I don't think even arguably better, but the production value as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to think this is only 2 years removed from this company almost going out of business, and so they're picking up all this great steam, and so that was really the era, the launching pad of, you know, the rest of the. And so, you know,
they're still, 6 months, a year away from actually taking the lead in the ratings anyway.
Yeah. And so, you know, these days, obviously, the spectacle is so much more grand, you know?
Yeah.
Back then, and there's kind of an appeal to that because it feels more intimate. But at the same time, no, I totally get you. Like, it's like you know, there's a hot dog stand just behind the gates and people are lining up for that and being like, oh, is a match going on? Yeah, great. So, no, I got you. It was kind of small. But I liked the match. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was just, you know, they're Austin, obviously, he was more of a brawler then because he had to be because of his crappy neck because of Owen Hart. And, you know, The Undertaker, even he'd been around for, you know, 6 years or 7 years at that point.
Was the match as kind of plodding as I remember?
A little bit, yeah. It was a deliberate storytelling match. And so that it did seem, but I just remember Stone Cold, his better matches had a bit more intensity than I think this one had.
Even when he was brawling, he would still work a pretty fast pace.
Yeah, and this,
or he could at least.
I didn't see a lot of that in this one, but it, I don't know, it was a decent match. It was two kind of older-ish guys telling a story in the ring, which was fine. But, it was a bit, like, especially coming off of Triple H and The Rock, which, you know, knowing that Triple H, like, completely destroyed his knee in that match. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know which spot it was. Like, I thought I remembered it, but, like, when he came off that ladder awkwardly, like, he kept on fighting, like, the match continued. So yeah. I'm not sure exactly when it was that he jacked up his leg, but that was a pretty intense match. And then this one just felt like, you know, it's two iconic guys who were just going at it. It was what it was, but I don't know. I remember it being a lot more. Maybe I'm just spoiled by today, or I just, you know, there's just so many. The roster is so great these days; they can put on great matches. And back then, you know, it was the Attitude Era. Was what it was. It was a lot of fun, but you know, it's comparing apples and oranges, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And Kane was in a dumpster.
Any other thoughts?
Forgot about that bit.
And Kane was in a dumpster. Yeah,
I realized that. Right. I didn't have a single fucking clue what was happening. But I threw Mankind into a dumpster, and then Kane came out, and then he hit his own foot with a hammer, and then he went back into the dumpster. But that was it. That was the whole thing. And it just ended. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. So it was good. It was good to reminisce. It was good fun to reminisce. I think it's time for Oh No's is Adam Rose.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I'm going to go first.
Yeah, you go first. You've been sitting on yours for a month, so.
All right.
Let's hear it.
Oh, God. How do I start this off? Okay. So, Adam Rose, he's all hepped up on bath salts or acid or whatever the hell the party, his little rave kids do.
Yeah.
Right? So, he's stumbling around backstage of the arena. Once again, he doesn't have a match, so he's just sort of, you know, he's fine being all hepped up on whatever he's on. Anyways, he's in his wrestling gear because he's like, well, you know what? I got to be ready. You know, you never know when they're going to call my number. They're at the main event. He knows it's not going to happen. He's hepped up. So he goes to go change his clothes, but he accidentally stumbles into the women's locker room.
Oh,
okay?
Geez.
He goes back there immediately. Larson, you always think it's going to be worse than it is, and it's not. This isn't that bad. He goes to the women's locker room. He starts to pull down his drawers. And a couple of the women walk in, and they see his dingus. And they start chuckling because he's got a little dingus. And he's like, oh, God, oh, God. So he pulls up his pants, goes backstage, lost confidence. And they're like, you know, I don't know, fucking Brad Maddox comes up to him. He's like, hey, you know, what's wrong, Adam Rose? What's your problem? And he's like, well, I'm bummed out now because, you know, I have actually a very impressive penis once it's fully engorged. But I just went back there and the women saw me with my small penis when it's, you know, flaccid. And so I've just lost confidence because now all these girls all the divas are talking about my dick like it's tiny, but really I'm a shower. I mean, I'm a grower, not a shower. And that's what Maddox says. Yeah, that's what they call it, right? You're a grower, not a shower. And so he's like, well, you know, Adam Rose, all you got to do is really show them that, you know, you have a very large penis when it's erect.
Oh, God.
And so Adam Rose, hey, that's a good point because then they'll know. Then they'll know. And so goes back into the women's room and he fluffs himself and he's like, look, ladies, I'm actually really big. And they're like, I've got my confidence back because my new name is Adam Grows Doesn't Show.
Oh, man.
Adam Rose doesn't Boo. Show.
Goodness gracious.
I'm very happy with myself about that one.
Oh, my God.
Sitting on that for a month.
Jesus. It's a great choice of words. Anybody want to fill in the Divas, man? I mean, that one?
Sure. I'll get mine out of the way because it's awful.
Okay.
All right, so Adam Rose has obviously been going through some rough times. He hasn't really quite made the leap from success at NXT to the main roster. He's been struggling. So because of these struggles and because he's not getting consistent work on TV, he's had to get a second job to support his family, which is tough to do when you're on the road, you know, mm-hmm. 200 days of the year. So he does some thought, what do I want to do? And he really likes making things. He's a very handy guy.
Yeah.
You know, so he thinks, okay, I'm a handy guy. I'll see if I can use that to make some more money for my family. So he goes around to various places, and they have a problem with his schedule. But he finds one place in his hometown where they'll let him, you know, take advantage of his handiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a local hardware store. He gets the job in,
you idiot.
You know, for an extra 100 days a year.
God damn it.
When he's not on the road. And so he says, I'm going to start using this as part of my new wrestling persona. And plus, there's a marketing opportunity
mm-hmm.
if we just change my last name.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happens to be the store that he works at.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes to Venice and says, okay, I'm changing my character from this party guy to like a real handyman type guy.
Right.
And my name would be
Adam Lowe's.
Adam Lowe's. He works at the Lowe's hardware store.
Lowe's, improving
oh
home improvement.
Oh, my God.
Adam Lowe's, improving home
improvement. How do I follow these?
Adam Lowe's.
I actually just thought of another one, so let's see if I can wing this, because I feel, I don't know, right? I look at my one now, I'm like, we'll save that. That's just, you know, let's if we set the bar this low, let's not... Over
yeah, don't use a AAA idea on this
oh,
week.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. Okay, right. Let's make something up. So, which is always good fun. Actually, right. No, this is us. This will start with whoever wins Tough Enough. I don't pay attention to Tough Enough, but whoever wins next year of Tough Enough, we don't know who it is. They're getting shown around the WWE for the first time, how it all works and stuff. Like, because it's about to go into a live Raw, and as they're going to think, they see Gorilla Position. They go, "Why is that called Gorilla Position?" They go, "Oh, it's because of Gorilla Monsoon, etc., etc., etc." But weirdly, a few weeks later, when this Tough Enough person is getting changed in the locker room, out of the corner of their eye, they see a huge monkey run past. Just a huge monkey run past. And they're like, what the hell is that? And they look around, they can't see anything. And they're like, what the hell's going on? And throughout, we can pepper it across weeks if they see, just always out the corner of their eye, and we can have little bits where just monkeys just wander past. And they're like, well, what's going on? And this guy starts believing that there's a conspiracy. That actually, the WWE is run by monkeys. And he tracks down the leader. And the leader, formerly known as Adam Rose, is now known as a damn dirty ape. Boom! There we go. I don't even fucking know. I apologize greatly for that one. Yeah, I'll go with the Planet of the Apes reference for this.
Yeah, that's good. What a weird crop of Adam Rose gimmicks. I still like my Adam Grows Doesn't Shows gimmick.
Jeez.
Damn it.
Terrible.
I think we have to redo those scientific things that said that this was the podcast that everyone had to listen to, because I think after this, it's, you know, there may be some changes made.
Oh, no, I doubled down on that, man. I think absolutely it is. So, okay, so should we determine now? Should we say, is that, do we want to make one last next week be our last, oh, no, it's Adam Rose? Because I think he's getting a gimmick change anyway, so our job may be done.
He's doing the thing with Brad Maddox.
I think we should officially transition after next week, or after, after the next month. After next
to
month.
The Roman Reigns, right?
To the Roman Reigns. We got to figure out a good play on words for Roman Reigns, that particular segment. We got to bring our AAA game. To be honest, I'll be honest with you. I think this week was my best Adam Rose outing I'll ever have. because I judge quality by the length of time I've had it in my head.
I mean, I will say this, that's impressive. You managed to remember it for a month.
That is, yeah, see, exactly. So, yeah, we'll do that next time. Did we miss anything this week? Am I missing anything? We got our book of the match. It's WrestleMania 29.
You should watch TakeOver so we can actually talk about that next time.
Maybe I'll watch TakeOver and I'll be like, guys, and you'll be like, yeah, we know. That was a month ago. All right, just stop. Just stop now.
We can't even remember it since then.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, so anyways, that's it for us. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. You guys. Gals,
guys,
everything
and gals.
In between and either side. I don't fucking know.
People get so impatient for this podcast too. Like, Dan, your people just start flooding our Twitter with "Where is it? Where is it?" Like they love you, but they realize we're the gatekeepers. So like they have to deal with it. They're like, "Where is it? God damn it! Where is it?
Where is it?
Yeah.
Give me my fix." So yeah. Anyways, so yeah. Until next month or next week, if you want to listen to me and Larson, we'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah. Goodbye. Bye and stuff.